Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
Continuing and probably wrapping up today this discussion of the people we have involved with our trusts and our wills, the fiduciary people, and you want to get into some of the legal requirements for these people.
Yeah, so we've been talking about who do we trust, right? The power of trusting somebody or the trap of trusting someone. And so the fiduciary duty is laid upon somebody, and that's a fancy word just to say they have responsibilities. So the responsibilities are important because if they do not fulfill the responsibilities by law, then we have other beneficiaries in the background. And the other beneficiaries are watching. The other beneficiaries may not be happy beneficiaries. They may think that you're taking too long. They may think that you're stealing money. They may think that that new boat you just bought came from mom's trust fund instead of doing what is right. So all the fiduciary duties then really are meant to protect and give guidance to a trustee. So we're going to talk about a trustee. We're not talking about financial power of attorney, medical powers of attorney, wills. We're going to hunker down into trusts. And this means any type of a trust, whether it's a revocable living trust and you have to come in to assist somebody because they have a health incident, or it could be an irrevocable trust. An irrevocable trust is one that can't be changed. So that happens typically when we have a revocable trust and then the person who created it dies. Well, if I can't get their signature anymore, which is really, really hard to do if somebody dies, then that becomes irrevocable. In other words, unchangeable, not amendable any longer. Or whether we set up a specific irrevocable trust. So that could be done because there are tax issues that are happening. We put in a life insurance policy into an ILET, an irrevocable life insurance trust. We create irrevocable trusts to put money in for freeze techniques in estate planning. There's so many reasons to intentionally create an irrevocable trust. So it doesn't matter what type of a trust we're talking about. The point is that we're having somebody come in, take the reins of that trust, and now fiduciary duties immediately attach, and we need to kind of pull these apart because these protect the individual. When they do it well, these laws will protect them. If they don't do it well, if they're lazy, if they're stealing, if they're being a bad trustee, then the law will bite them. And that's what I talk about trust. Trusts are a phenomenal instrument to use because it protects the person that we're putting on the bullseye on, right? So when you become a trustee, you get a bullseye put on you. And the trust and the law will protect that trustee when they do well. But if they do wrong, then we have a bullseye to hit.
Okay.
So, so it really is a nice system of do well and you're protected, do bad and we'll get you. So let's talk about some of these fiduciary duties.
Okay.
So the first one that I have listed is the duty of accounting. Now, this is not tax returns, even though, yes, that also means of a duty to make sure that the taxes are paid. But accounting means being able to account for what is in the trust and out of the trust. In other words, a ledger. That's an easier word. I often talk to people about the ability to find or have accessibility to bank accounts, statements, investment statements. So we can do most accounting by tracing what the activity has been in and out. Now, we would rather not do a forensic, backdated, and a much more difficult type of tracing of what's happened in and out. We would rather have a trustee that knows how to at least trace their own and account for their own work. If they write a check, can they keep a ledger? Mm. If they have money come in, whether it's income, whether it is collecting an asset after somebody passed away, do they have the ability to add it to an overall ledger so that we understand what is going in the estate and what is coming out of the estate? So the law says that a beneficiary is entitled to enough information to keep their interests intact. Okay, so in other words, the law wants to make sure that each beneficiary can understand what their rights are in the trust document. So when someone passes away, we have to be able to send them the trust document as a starting point. That can be redacted if people have that desire. So we need to make sure that their interests are disclosed, not the whole trust. Sometimes that's what families desire. Mm. It's easier if we just give the whole trust because that by law says that you fulfilled your duty of keeping them informed because you gave them the whole document. There's nothing hidden. That's our preference, but we can redact it. Then we need to start marshaling the assets and we have to start keeping track of them. That's called accounting. So do we know where money has gone? Do we know what's come in and gone out? And do we have the right person to manage that? This whole series has been talking about finding the right person. So do we have someone who is well organized, or are they running their own finances by the seat of their pants? Do they have no idea how much they have in their own accounts? That may not be the right person to actually manage your money or your estate. And because if they can't keep track of their own stuff, are they really going to do it well for someone else's? Sometimes the answer is yes, actually. Mm. But watching their own finances is actually a pretty good key indicator of whether or not they're going to be able to have the skill
may
set.
May not always have a lot of choice, though. I mean, again, we've got all these requirements, but there may not be that many choices for people to take this job on.
Well, that is true. Oftentimes, we select family members. So number one is we look at kids. Are they old enough to do it? Do they have the skill set? We spent a whole show last week on whether or not they have the time and the ability to do it. Go back to legacyandfaith.com, grab that podcast.
What about an age requirement? Is there an age requirement for a fiduciary?
A legal adult. So in Washington, that's 18. But would I want to put this type of stuff on an 18 or 19-year-old? Oh, man. So the answer is definitively not. But so if you have younger kids, then we look to siblings. Do we have a sibling or family member that can step in? So first we look at kids, then most people naturally look for then siblings that could step in. Otherwise, we're going to trusted friends. And it seems to be almost a last resort to name either a professional trustee, a law firm, a CPA. Now, one of the reasons is because if someone names me as their trustee, then they got to pay me. So it becomes a more expensive proposition, but yet I've done it many a times. I know exactly how to fulfill the duties, and it alleviates the other family members, no matter where along the line, or friends. Man, that better be a really good friend to step in and take on these duties. Because like I said, we really are painting a bullseye on that person. And here's the difficulty is that, this child of mine will do it. Well, how about the other two? Okay, so we have three kids in this storyline. How about the other two? Oh, their relationship is great. Oh, we're a loving family. We all get along. The kids are famous. Until money is at stake, until grieving is a part of the process, until there are other things that intervene and it takes longer to close the estate because you put a child in who is also grieving, who also has a life, who has to raise kids, who has a spouse, who has to go to work. And all of a sudden, the expectations of the other siblings is this should have been done yesterday and we're barely out of the gate. And all of a sudden, now the things start coming up. Now the emotions start coming up. So we need to be really careful in who we select, because unfortunately, I've seen it, that the family dynamics come to the surface when someone passes away. And so one of the first things that beneficiaries will talk about is they're supposed to do this. Now, of course, the beneficiary has no clue what they're supposed to, what the fiduciary duties are. But that's what they're going to say. In other words, they're already starting the you're supposed to's, which then at some point raise to the level of saying of threats. Well, maybe I need to get my own attorney.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this has to happen. So that's the end result, is that beneficiaries end up getting an attorney of their own. And guess what? As soon as they get an attorney of their own, do you think that attorney is going to be reasonable, or that, or they got to make enough money to make this case worth it?
How often does this scenario take place, do you think? This breaking up the family? Half the time?
I don't know if it's quite half.
But
it's more than what I would like to see. Now, some of it is that there's family dynamics that are already existing and we just can't deal with it. So I have a client who has been incapacitated for many years. One daughter has stepped in to help mom and the other two are off pointing the finger at the sister. They hired an attorney and now everything has broken loose. And so yes, it happens, unfortunately, more often than what we want. Specifically, boy, be careful. If you are in a blended family, it is ripe for misunderstanding. It is ripe for my dad versus your mom or vice versa. And that's really where good estate planning can save the day. You need to have a very strong plan if you are in a blended family. Don't mess around. I know the kids now grew up together and everyone is happy and everything is looking good. I'm telling you, there is something that changes when death occurs. And the feelings when things drag on longer than what is expected, even the best of families, even the closest of families, hurt feelings just start. Do you want hurt feelings to start allowing a root of bitterness to enter into someone's life? So this is also a part of what does the trustee desire? How much information are they willing to give to the family? Some trustees are very private, and they get to determine what information goes, not me as the attorney. I advise, I cannot dictate. So therefore, choosing the right fiduciary who is going to want to keep everybody informed. Well, now we have a better system, a better process. We do a good job as a firm of keeping people informed when we have permission to do it. So information is critical. There's opportunity, ripe opportunity to have hurt feelings, and we're putting a bullseye on the fiduciary. They need to be able to do the most simplistic duty, which is accounting. But we didn't even get through the other ones. We're going to have to rush through them after break.
Okay, well, discussing this, the kind of people you have in fiduciary roles in your estate planning, so important. And if you'd like more advice on this or help, Paul Grant would love to help you. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and more, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul Grant, talking about fiduciaries, rights, limitations, beneficiaries. What kind of legal rights do they have? And you want to kind of enumerate this now.
Yeah, so beneficiaries do have legal rights because the trust is designed for the beneficiary. It's not for the trustee to administer forever and ever, amen. It is so that we can close the estate with efficiency and effectiveness and then get things distributed according to the terms of the trust. So the terms of the trust are very important. You need to have somebody who's able to then follow the terms of the trust or have a relationship with an attorney that can guide them to understand the trust and what they are supposed to be doing. So the trust as an instrument gives us our boundaries if there are any boundaries to a beneficiary. So for example, we may have a beneficiary that only gets so much money each month, but then if a trustee gives them more, well, they didn't follow the terms of the trust. And by the way, the terms of the trust are not negotiable. Just because you don't agree with it, that doesn't mean that you can then make an alternative decision. So trustees need to be able to follow the terms of the trust and not get caught up in the emotion of it. What if a sibling asks for money and the trustee has to say no because the terms of the trust don't allow it? It's not open for debate of whether or not you can break the trust rules. Yes, there is a thing called discretion in the trust, but there are also very clear boundaries. So many trusts that we create don't have any boundaries. So a trustee can liberally assist somebody, but there are many trusts that have boundaries for the benefit of someone else. So we got to be able to follow what the trust says.
That's a pretty common scenario. People wanting a distribution earlier than what's planned.
Absolutely.
Hey, you're sitting on a $500,000 there. I want mine and I want to be down the road.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's not do this trust thing. Let's just go ahead and give it to me. Well, that's not their decision. And so is the trustee that you're putting in place going to be able to follow those guidelines? We have a phrase in the firm, which is for beneficiaries, our job is not a job of customer satisfaction. It is not for you. Right. This is a job of ensuring that the trust is followed and that the trustee is well protected. Now, the trustee does have an overarching duty of loyalty. And this is very important. This duty of loyalty is to the beneficiaries. They must treat each beneficiary on the same platform. So does this person have good relationships with everybody across the board, or is there one sibling relationship that is more difficult? And so is the trustee going to be able to put emotion aside and make rational, reasonable decisions and with the guidance of the trust instrument, but for all beneficiaries, which could include and usually do include themselves. So they cannot make decisions that benefit themselves over the others. Well, I want to buy the house, and so I'm going to give myself a low interest rate, and I'm going to make all my siblings have a low interest rate. Well, that all of a sudden benefited the trustee who is now making the decision for everybody else. Of course, unless it's agreed upon, right? So you can always get agreement with beneficiaries. But a trustee who is also a beneficiary, which is the majority of circumstances, they need to ensure that they have a duty of loyalty, that they are not self-serving, and that they are not making decisions that serve their interest above anyone else's. In other words, this is everybody is on the same level. Everybody needs to be treated fairly. How does that differentiate if you have a special needs sibling that you're supposed to take care of? Well, hopefully the trust addressed that and gave greater permissions to take care of somebody who has greater financial need or has no voice in the process at all. So hopefully the document is created very, very well. Unfortunately, I'll review a lot of trusts, and there are a lot of gaps in trust that I see. So you may want to get what you currently have reviewed. It may be time to update. You got to do this thing, estate planning, more regularly than what you believe. So a duty of loyalty is very, very important to treat everybody the same and make sure that the beneficiaries are taken care of and that you make decisions that are in the interest of the beneficiaries. Now, that's also a difficult one because there are bills to be paid and you have to give equal credence to creditors. So you cannot say, I'm not going to pay that creditor. That could also be a breach of your fiduciary duty to not pay a legal bill, a legal invoice of the decedent. So there has to be the ability to balance all of this and not get emotionally tied up in the relationships. And again, what happens when a beneficiary asks for something? The ability to be strong and say, this is what the trust is. This is where we can come into play. This is where having a good attorney to be the trustee's advocate and step in front of beneficiaries is very, very helpful.
So if you did not have – you're obviously talking about the benefits of doing this with a trust. If a person just had a will, they don't have anywhere near this kind of control or
– there are different duties. There are some similar duties. So, for example, what we're just talking about, making sure that creditors are paid and then also doing and making decisions in light of the beneficiaries, that is in a will environment as well. Mm-hmm. But there's no duty to invest. So there's a duty to actually invest assets. So does the trustee have the ability and skill set, relationships to invest properly? And those investments need to be properly invested. In other words, not too high of risk, not too low of risk. It's called a prudent investor rule, to where the prudent investor rule is you need to invest as an average individual would invest, not one who's high risk, not one that's low risk. So if we have a high risk trustee, they may be investing money, but they are supposed to do it for the other beneficiaries, not based upon their personality. So again, it's this person who's able to take a step back. Who do you want as your trustee? Person who can take a step back, be coached, and make good, reasonable decisions for everybody involved, putting aside their own desires, putting aside their own this is what I would do. So it needs to be someone who is able to be more balanced and able to make decisions in light of all the circumstances for everybody. So they also have to be able, again, accounting, trace what comes in and out, but also understand what is income versus principal, because there's an accounting act, a principal and income act of which assets are best used. There's duties in law and in the law and statute of Washington that says that one of the considerations must be what's the taxability? What are the tax consequences? So we need to have someone, again, who has professional relationships is what I would hope that they come to the table with. They have an advisor. They have financial advisors. They have CPAs. They have attorneys that can walk them through this process, because we're talking about how do we make the smoothest transition possible, but yet simultaneously we're giving all of these duties to the person who has to step in and actually manage this for the period of time to close the estate, or if someone needs longer-term assistance, manage this money on behalf of a sibling, usually for a much longer period of time. So understanding the tax consequences of selling one asset over another asset, of not selling a home and deciding to rent it, what are the tax consequences in a trust? All of this needs to be discovered before that decision is made. And because if the trustee is not doing it right, remember, we have got beneficiaries in the background and they're going to point the finger and they're going to say, I want my money, or you're not doing it right. And if the trustee is doing a good job, then all of this is actually meant to protect them. It's actually not meant to be a bullseye. It's actually meant to say the bullseye is not on me because I did my job well. But if they're doing a bad job, that's when the bullseye gets painted on them and the beneficiaries have legal rights, the ability to point the finger and say, you're not doing it right, you're not doing it well, you're depleting the estate, or you are taking forever and it's unreasonable. Beneficiaries have rights, so you got to make sure you have the right trustee to blend with the family who will take on these responsibilities and do them well.
And the trustee should not be surprised that they are the trustee.
Yeah, that's right.
You should tell them sometime in advance, I would like to make you the trustee. Is that okay? Or do you have an objection?
I always encourage information, and we actually have educational sessions for trustees. I believe that they should know the assets so that they know how to find these things. There's a lot of communication that sets up people much, much better for success. You want to put someone in who's going to have success, then let's do it right. Let's not take the cheap way or the easy road. Let's set up the people that you're going to trust, because it's going to take some work.
Choosing the right people to help you with your estate, so important. And maybe listening to this show, you can tell that Paul is somebody you would like to maybe put in a position of trust. And how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can find past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.